in committee to order. And if you'll all turn your clocks back to 1 o'clock, we'll get started. We want to be on time here. Yeah. The Transportation Committee is meeting this afternoon. It's 2 minutes after 1. With us today is Senator Egan, Senator Joe Thomas, Senator Menard, myself, Senator Kukesh. Senator Huggins has been excused and is not in town today. We have two items on the agenda today, and that's Senate Bill 79 and Senate Bill 80. And we're going to meet and talk about them together here today. So I'd like to ask Senator Menard to come up to the table and introduce us to her two proposals. Yes, would you please join us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Senator Menard, and this is my staff, Michael Rovito. And together we are privileged to be able to bring before you Senate Bill 79 and 80. They will ensure, and if I may go ahead with the... They will ensure a private-public partnership procurement or process, oftentimes referred to as a P3, for the Kinnick Arm Crossing project that generates the best value to the state of Alaska. The passage of this legislation will facilitate the Kinnick Arm Crossing being open for traffic in the year 2015, thus expediting for Alaska the benefits generated from the crossing. Both bills were written in consultation with Kubota, which has been recently successful in their assurance of ROD, or the Record of Decision, from the Federal Highway Administration. Of course, I always say that a project is only as good as the person behind it, and we have here with us today Michael Foster, who is not only chair of the Kubota board, but was also the engineer behind the Red Dog Mine. Kevin Hemingway is also here to testify today. He is with Kubota as our chief financial officer and has won many, Mr. Chairman, many national awards for his excellent financial work. Andrew Nemec is also here to testify in support of the bill and has steered this project since the beginning of since he became on the board. All three of these gentlemen are here to answer any technical and specific questions about the bill. Senate Bill 80 will accomplish four items deemed necessary for the PPP. They are, one, an increase in Kubota's bonding authority from $500 million to $600 million, property tax relief for crossing and associated facilities, contractual monetary obligations, and for establishing a project reserve fund. Now, Senate Bill 79 is very self-explanatory. It will simply appropriate the $150 million into the project reserve created by Senate Bill 80, and that will be housed in the Department of Revenue. To continue, as you can see in your packet, this project is supported by many, including the Alaska Trucking Association, the Alaska Support Industry Alliance, the Mat-Su Burial City of Wasilla, the Municipality of Anchorage. The public polling data includes showing wide support across the public. We have come so far with this Kinnick Arm Crossing project, and the project is ready to go. I ask the committee to please move these bills out so thousands of jobs can be created, years of hard work can continue, and Alaska infrastructure and economy can be strengthened. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will defer to the leaders of Kubota.
Could I ask you a question?
Yes.
Could you answer first the reason why there's not a fiscal note in this package?
Yes. I did get something from legal, and it says Alaska Statutes 24.08.03 reads, before a bill or resolution except an appropriation bill, it's reported from the committee of first referral, there shall be an attached bill as a fiscal note containing an estimate of the amount of the appropriation increase or decrease which will result from an enactment of the bill for the current fiscal year and 5 years succeeding the fiscal years. If the bill has no fiscal impact, a statement to that effect shall be attached. So it will come.
Okay.
Thank you.
Did you have anything to add?
No, sir, I do not.
Okay. Any questions for the senator or staff? Senator Thomas?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'm a supporter of infrastructure projects. There's no doubt in that. And to me, the essential question to me as I've looked at the paperwork is if in fact the what the legal liability of the state of Alaska is. That's really what I'm struggling with. If I'm convinced that the answer is that the state has no legal liability, left with debts from Kubota's creditors or its responsibility to complete or maintain the bridge, then that makes sense to me. But as I read it, I'm struggling with the concept of just what the state's liability is, and I know you have people here to testify that will probably help clarify that. But as I read on page 2, just to point out the specific language that causes me some concern, and that's absent the statistics, you know, because I don't think we should necessarily be that worried about the number of cars or the population estimates into the future, whatever, if in fact the state's not on the hook for it. But it appears, at least from the reading of the bill and specifically in a couple of areas, one being page 2 of SB 80, line 17, it says the monetary obligations incurred by the authority under the partnership or contracts are obligations of the state, and satisfaction of those obligations from funds other than authority funds is subject to appropriation. So that's my main question anyhow, that hopefully somebody will be able to address and assure me that what amount of money is actually obligated and what could be obligated in the future, depending on what potentially happens, again, based on the ridership. And you know, we showed great concern, or some people showed great concern over an 8-cent motor fuel tax, which, depending on what your car travels on a daily basis, would be about $10 a month. We're talking about $10 a day. So, I mean, it's, you know, the usage and the conversion or diversion of traffic from the existing road to this one, and that stuff all plays into this, but really doesn't make much difference one way or the other if, in fact, the state is not on the hook for $500 or $600 million or $700 million or whatever it might ultimately come to if the project does not pan out as it's anticipated, has cost overruns and under usage, something like that. So if
is that something you'd like to have somebody else answer?
Yes, I'm
okay.
My
sure, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and excuse you from the table. Thank you for your testimony. And you would be available for the rest of the meeting, I hope. You're good. Thank you. Let's go ahead and ask Kubota to come up and make their presentation. And if you would remember and try to answer Senator Thomas's question during your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the Senate Transportation Committee today.
Your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Michael Foster. I'm chairman of Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. I have with me today Andrew Nemec, who is our executive director of the authority, and Kevin Hemingway, who is our chief financial officer. I'd like to go ahead and give a little bit of an overview. I'll try to keep it short and brief. And I'll also address Senate Bill 79. Mr. Nemec will address Senate Bill 80, and Mr. Hemingway will wrap up with traffic forecasts, the financial model, and the revenue stream, which is what Senator Thomas just asked Senator Menard about. So, with that, there's been a little bit of discussion about support, or I've read a few emails or blogs about support from federal highways. I'd like to assure you that from my meeting with the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, LaHood, through his administrator, Victor Mandez, and through his staff and the local office, that we have received nothing but support from federal highways. And as you know, we did receive a record of decision from their agency on December 15th with a build alternative. We also to show where the project is. Also, the project has been listed under the National Highway System, which is a commitment for the project to be part of the overall national, what we call the NHS system. And even though it isn't constructed yet, the lane miles for the facility is actually already listed, and will be included under the existing NHS when the project is completed. You've also have seen more likely the article in the Anchorage Daily News, which came out on Sunday, which we responded to from some of their questions. I'd like to also point out that there was a Dittman survey that was done about a month ago, which shows roughly 60% of Alaska supports building the project. In the Matsu borough, it's about 75%, and the Anchorage area is in the 62-63%. We also received just yesterday a letter from Mayor Sullivan. Well, actually, it went to Senator Menard. And the letter from Mayor Sullivan, Municipality of Anchorage, is, I encourage the Alaska Legislature to approve the supporting legislation and recommend statute changes to move the project forward in a timely and beneficial manner, Senate Bill 79, Senate Bill 80. The passage of 7980 is important to facilitate the progress of the project in a timely and beneficial manner to deliver a project that will be an asset to Alaskans for generations. Dan Sullivan, Mayor. There was also some, I saw a couple blogs where it talked about the appropriations for Kubota, anywhere from, $100 million to $110 million. I'd like to clarify that. The actual appropriation to the Kinnick Arm Crossing was basically $229 million, $228,917,838, but $229 million. In 2006, roughly $128 million of that was reappropriated to other public projects throughout the state. The fact is, if the money was still on the Kinnick Arm Crossing, the $128 million that was reappropriated, we would likely be here asking for only $22 million versus the $150 million. That $128 million represented what we needed to for reserve to take the project, the public-private partnership that Senator Menard talked about, to take that to market to get the best value for the state of Alaska. The reserve fund is a $150 million request to be put into a fund that actually is managed by the Department of Revenue. The purpose of the fund is to allow us to go out to market to obtain the best value proposals from a private entity, because this is, as I said earlier, a public-private partnership. And as a partnership, the public, in this case the state, and the private share in risk, they share in rewards. The infrastructure is owned by the state of Alaska. The revenue stream is owned by the state of Alaska. The capital to build the project is private sector capital. There is no state or federal capital that's used to construct the facility. It's private sector. The reserve fund is there to handle the annual payments. We call them the availability payments in the initial years. The reserve fund is not there to operate Kubota today. It's not there to continue studies or designs or permitting. It is there to be used when the bridge is open. And in fact, it will not be used until the bridge actually is open for use. As in any project, the initial years, the toll or the revenue stream may be less than the payment stream. And so in the first several years of operation, we project that we will need this reserve fund to make the annual payments to the private partner. After that, the excess revenue that comes back in will pay that reserve back. And our projections over a 60-year time frame is about $8.6 billion rolls back into that reserve fund that can be used for Title 23 services statewide, which includes Marine Highway, includes boardwalks, includes bridges, ports, infrastructure statewide. And so the revenue stream from this will first go to retire the reserve appropriation and the revenue that's generated from this project will then be used for other infrastructure projects statewide. Again, point out that the money is appropriated today isn't even used until 2015 or 2016 when the bridge is open for use, and it's only used in the initial years to cover the shortfall that we currently project and have always projected. It is not a capital appropriation. It is a short-term use with a payback based on revenue stream. With that, I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Mr. Nemec for Senate Bill 80.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andrew Nemec. I'm the Executive Director for the Kinnickahon Bridge and Toll Authority. The structural changes under 1975, as outlined in Senate Bill 80, will aid in the successful procurement of the Kinnickahon Crossing, reduce the cost of project finance, and generate the best value to the state of Alaska. The passage of the legislation, as you've heard, will also facilitate the project being open to traffic in 2015. Statutory changes are being proposed to increase Kubota's bonding authority, clarify property tax language, address contractual monetary obligations, and add language to establish and manage a reserve fund. An increase in bonding authority from $500 million to $600 million matches the $600 million allocation of private activity bond capacity that was provided by USDOT. That allocation remains with Kubota and the project. And private activity bonds are also called PABs. And any PABs issued are a liability of the private borrower and not the state. The property tax language clarifies and clearly specifies that the bridge and associated connectors are not subject to property tax if operated by a private developer on behalf of the state. And this project would already be exempt if it was operated by the state. And that's no different than other public transportation projects. And then all private facilities that were potentially installed along with the facility but not for transportation would still be subject to local property tax. AS 1975 is modified to clarify that monetary obligations under a public-private partnership for the purposes of constructing this project are obligations of the state, and satisfaction of those obligations from other than funds that reside with Kubota are subject to appropriation by the legislature. This change applies only to the monetary obligations as a result of a public-private partnership and not other contractual or corporate obligations of Kubota. Prior to a public-private agreement being approved, a comprehensive evaluation is done, and that will be completed with officials from the Department of Revenue, the Department of Transportation, and the Department of Law. This change is necessary and essential to attract low-cost debt and equity to finance the project. It will reduce the viability payments that Kubota and potentially the state would have to make, and it will help keep tolls affordable for the traveling public. The project reserve fund provisions were added to allow Kubota to properly manage the project toll revenue and contractual obligations under a public-private agreement. The reserve fund will apply sources of revenue, which are both tolls and any appropriations that would be made. For the specific purposes, such as providing the annual payment to the private partner, surplus funds are then available for capacity improvements and other federally eligible transportation purposes. Appropriations made or held by the Department of Revenue, has been mentioned, until a private partnership agreement is signed, at which time they're available for deposit or transfer into this reserve fund that we are discussing. Our procurement advisors, who are under contract with the Department of Law, have reviewed the proposed legislation for consistency with AS 1975 and other related Alaska law. I'll finish by just saying these provisions will enhance project credit and allow the developer to obtain the lowest cost of capital, thereby providing the greatest benefit to the state.
Thank you. Would you go ahead and continue, please?
Thank you, through the chair. This is Kevin Hemingway. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Kinnickahon Bridge and Toll Authority. I'm going to talk about the public-private partnership, traffic and toll revenue, and try to provide some clarification around the structure of the transaction we're discussing. As it's been mentioned, the Kinnickarm Crossing is a toll bridge. Unlike other infrastructure in the state, it will be generating revenue. A significant milestone was reached when FHWA determined a build decision on that record of decision that allows us to move forward with procurement, contracting for the facility, and to push it through to opening to the public as soon as 2015. Under the proposed structure, the private sector will be responsible for the design, construction, financing, operation, and maintenance of the facility for a period of approximately 35 to 40 years, terms which will finally be set when the contracts or when the RFP is put out on the street. They will raise the equity and borrow the debt to finance the project, not the state. That debt will be non-recourse to the state. They will also be responsible for the design-build contract, and substantially all of the construction risk is their obligation under the agreement. They will do that in exchange for periodic payments that will be used to repay their financing and to pay for operations and maintenance of the facility. At the end of the term, they're responsible for turning the facilities back to the state in like-new state under the conditions of the contractual arrangement. The state, through Kibata, will own the bridge facilities, not the private partner. We will retain legal title the entire time. They will set tolls and own the toll revenue stream. That toll revenue stream will be used to make the periodic payments. In the event in the first couple of years, if the toll revenue stream is short, that's the purpose of the reserve fund, to provide credit enhancement and surety for the developer's lenders. But they do not have a direct interest in that account. And then any remaining surplus toll revenue will be used to fund other transportation improvements, including, as Mike mentioned, Title 23 eligible projects that are everything from the Alaska Marine Highway System to roads, bridges, trails, et cetera. The competition for the project will be in large part based on the lowest annual periodic payment. They will also have to meet technical specifications that will be stipulated in the RFP. The proposals will be evaluated by a committee that includes input from the Attorney General's Office, the Departments of Transportation and Revenue, and final approval will be reside with the Kibata Board of Directors and the administration. And I want to point out the Kibata Board of Directors is comprised of the Commissioners of Revenue and Transportation, two legislators, one from each of the House and the Senate, and three members of the public appointed by the governor for staggered five-year terms. So it's a very regimented and disciplined procurement strategy that will provide another checkpoint for the state to determine whether to enter into the contract. SB 79 and 80 really establish a framework to attract good proposals, but the actual commitments don't occur until a contractual arrangement is entered into. Financing cost is clearly a significant component of what the developers, the private partners, will consider in submitting their proposals and calculating what their proposed annual availability payments will be, or their annual periodic payments to compensate them for design, build, finance, operate, and maintain of the facility. To the extent the state and Kibata can reduce the cost of capital for them, we will attract better value proposals at a lower annual or periodic payment. SB 79 and 80 are really important to achieving that best value, precisely because they'll lower the cost of financing to the private partner and provide the mechanisms required to establish contractual structures that the marketplace expects for this kind of an arrangement. We're also working to lower their cost of capital in other ways. We have in the past applied for a federal loan program that's low-interest patient capital called the Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, or TIFIA. The TIFIA program has not accepted our applications in the past. They have some limited capacity. We score very well in the competitive criteria, but we did not have a record of decision. We now have a record of decision, and we will be resubmitting a letter of interest, and are very confident that we will be considered and evaluated critically and have a good possibility of attracting TIFIA financing for the project. We've also obtained, through a US DOT program, $600 million of private activity bond capacity that the developers can choose to use that allows them to borrow funds at tax-exempt rates. This is directly related to the request to increase under SB 80 the $500 million of bonding capacity to $600 million, not because Kubota intends to issue debt that would be an obligation of the state, but because private activity bonds under federal tax law require a conduit issuer that is a public agency. And if our developers choose to use the entire capacity in their proposals, we want to be positioned to be able to accommodate them as a conduit issuer, but not a borrower. There are numerous successful P3s in the U.S. and throughout the world. Failures have been rare, but there has been approximately three of them in the United States out of hundreds. And in those cases, the demonstrated risk transfer of the public-private partnership, I said P3, that's a short for public-private partnership. You may also hear me say PPP. But the demonstrated risk transfer and assignment to the private sector proved that the public-private partnership concept worked, because in none of those cases is the state obligated for the debt or other liabilities of the private partner. And they continue to own the facilities. So some examples are SR 125 and the Dulles Greenway. In both those instances of a bankruptcy, under Chapter 11 in the one case and I believe Chapter 9 in the other, there was no recourse to the state for project financing. The state continued to own the assets. Traffic and toll revenue is a place where the state retains ownership. In order to own the infrastructure, there has to be shared risk. By retaining traffic and toll revenue, we do have some risk in the front end in what they call ramp-up in toll revenue studies. But we are very confident in our independent traffic and toll revenue studies and the project's ability to meet its obligations from toll revenue. Our base case forecast over the 35-year term of operations under that we've modeled indicates that toll revenue would cover availability payment or annual payment obligations by a factor of about 1.7 times. So there's a lot of margin of safety in those traffic forecasts. We're not right at the fringe. There is about $20 million over the first 3 years that gets repaid over the next several in the base case model. And I want to caution everyone that the models that we're looking at today are pro forma. They're prepared by Kubota and our consultants using best available market indicators and looking at other transactions that have gotten done. But we won't see the real model until we attract responsive proposals through the RFP process. Wilbur Smith Associates is the preeminent traffic and toll revenue forecaster. That's who we've hired. Their studies are what's known as investment grade. They're bankable on Wall Street. Their reputation and business model entirely resides, at least for this line of their business, on the quality, predictive accuracy, and the independence of those reports. Their track record for forecasting is exceptional. Over the last 10 years, their traffic and revenue studies have supported approximately $33 billion worth of toll revenue or toll road financings. And in just the last 5 years, it's been about $22 billion of the total. So they've been able to get deals done in a very difficult market condition. Over 22 different studies for startup toll roads, actual traffic has averaged about 96% of forecast. We're confident that over the life of the crossing, the state will recover its investment and earn a substantial return. In conclusion, SB 79 and 80 establish a framework to attract the most competitive proposals at the lowest cost and best value to the state. They do not commit the state to anything unless the private sector proposals are accepted and finalized, which would occur in the first half of 2012 at the earliest. Appropriations under SB 79 will be held by the Department of Revenue as fiduciary until acceptable proposals have been received for the project. Amendments under SB 80 simply serve to establish mechanisms at this time to develop a successful public-private partnership contracting framework. And the funds appropriated under SB 79 will serve as a project reserve, demonstrating to our prospective private partners that the state's serious about the essential nature of the project and its role in the public-private agreement as project owner. And the funds will be paid back over the term of the project. The project will generate a continuing revenue stream that can be used for other transportation infrastructure around the state, including AMHS, roads, trails, bridges, etc. And finally, I want to conclude that the project is needed to support economic development, jobs, access to land for population and industrial growth, and for the movement of people and goods and for safety. It'll benefit generations of Alaska, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
With that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes our presentation.
Senator Thomas, was your question adequately answered, or would you like to repeat it?
I think I'd like to repeat it because I'm still struggling with the language on the second page of Senate Bill 8 that is underlined, actually, which says, I don't have to read it to you, the monetary obligations incurred by the authority under the partnership or contracts or obligations are obligations of the state, and satisfaction of those obligations from funds other than authority funds is subject to appropriation, which I understand what that language says. But that doesn't seem to be what you're telling me, because you're saying there is no obligation for the state. We're going to own the project, but somebody else is going to run it. We're going to have $150 million that is put up as a fund to supplement for the first few years running. So that leads me to at least feel that $150 million is potentially obligated. But the toll money that comes in is, unless I misunderstand, is obligated to pay the debt service first.
It's actually not paying the debt service. It's paying what they call an annual availability fee. It's an annual payment to the developer that he uses to repay his financing and to pay for the operations and maintenance of the project. So the obligation, the major contractual obligation, is the commitment to make that annual payment, with the first pledge being the toll revenue backstopped by the reserve fund.
So there's no federal participation in the project?
There is some federal participation. Today we have about $65 million that will be available for right-of-way and construction phases of the project. Some of that will be acquired prior to the partnership, so the remainder of that will likely go into some component of construction of the project, and that those monies were appropriated in the 2006 session.
If I could, Senator, through the chair, Senator Thomas, is the commitment the state has to our private partner is the annual payment. Kind of, you can call it a lease payment, but it's an annual payment that we pay the private partner for the design, build, operate the facility, his capital outlay to construct it. And that's what that language is referring to, is the obligation of the state, and that's the annual payment. There is on the federal side participation on the annual payment. The annual payment comes from toll revenue. In the initial years, we understand the toll revenue will be short of the annual payment, and that's what this reserve fund is for, is for those initial years. As toll revenue exceeds and we have a net revenue, then it goes to pay that reserve back, and then ultimately the revenue that's generated from the project, the toll revenue the state owns, will go back into this reserve fund or a similar fund to be used for transportation projects statewide.
If I may, it was my understanding that if there was federal participation, though, that the first thing that is repaid from tolls or any revenue is for debt service and then for reasonable return on investment, and then any other private personal financing of the project. Is that not accurate, or is that not part of the deal? Is that something that's been changed?
Through the chair, this is Kevin Hemingway. That is an indirect answer. I have an indirect answer to that. The toll revenue will be used to fund the availability or the annual payment, lease payment to the developer. They will be responsible to use that for repayment of their financing, their operations and maintenance, and reasonable returns to their equity investors. We have entered into what's called a 129 toll agreement. It's a tri-party agreement between Alaska DOT, the U.S. Department of Transportation, and Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll, that stipulates that any surplus toll revenue we have after meeting the obligations will be used for Title 23 eligible projects, which are, again, roads, bridges, ferries, et cetera.
I guess what I'm looking at is if things don't go according to plan. You know, if things go according to plan, then great, everything works out. I can read what the plan is and how it's supposed to operate. I'm looking at the potential that it doesn't pan out, and in that case, I'm looking for what the state of Alaska is on the hook for if a couple hundred, $300 million have been expended and construction costs seem to be increasing. So who's going to take care of those additional construction costs, and then the impact that obviously has on the ridership or the consumer, the people that are using the bridge. Obviously, if you have an overrun, that changes dramatically the situation, and it also has an impact on the payback. And I'm looking for maybe a simple answer to what if the worst situation occurs? Does that mean that all the state would be out is $150 million? There can be no further obligation to the state other than, as is mentioned, a moral obligation. And I would not feel very good about moral obligations. I'm sure business is business, and moral obligations mean that somebody says we may have a moral obligation, but we're not giving anybody $300 million. We don't feel that morally obligated. So that is part of my concern, knowing exactly what the state's obligation is going to be in the long run should the project not come to completion, or it comes to completion and the statistics are very different as far as population and users of the bridge, meaning that there is more money needed to supplement the bridge, or there's just a close down of the project because there's not sufficient funding.
This is Michael Foster, and through the chair, Senator Thomas. The toll amount is set by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. The authority sets the toll amount. The capital cost to build the infrastructure is the private partner's responsibility. The public partner, the state's responsibility, is the annual payment. What the state has responsibility for, or shall we say what the state is on the hook for, is making that annual payment to the private partner. Private partner, if he estimates it costs $700 million to build the infrastructure and end up costing $800 million, well, that's just part of his business model. His annual payment does not get adjusted because it costs him more to do it. Likewise, his annual payment doesn't get adjusted because it costs him less. When he enters a proposal to us, he will enter a proposal and say, this is the least annual payment that I will accept to build this structure based on your criteria and your performance criteria, design criteria. And what the state of Alaska has responsibility for is once the facility is open, we're responsible for making that annual payment. The reserve fund is there. In the initial years, we know more than likely that toll revenue will be less than that annual payment. We also are just as confident that after the first few years of operating, that our toll revenue will be adequate to pay for that annual payment, and then with time, that revenue generates additional revenue, and our current model shows $8.6 billion in net revenue that can go back to other infrastructure projects statewide. So I guess to use the word, the skin in the game that the state has is the responsibility to make that annual payment to our private partner. So in a partnership, the state's responsibility is that annual payment. The private partner's responsibility is the design, construction, and operation of that facility based on our criteria.
Okay, and just my last question then.
Senator Thomas.
Yeah. I'll go back to page 2. Then why is the language necessary in lines 17, 18, 19, and 20 on page 2 that the monetary obligations incurred by the authority, which there's a lengthy list of them, including lawsuits, suing people, all kinds of contracts, all kinds of other instruments with public and private persons, government units or agencies, et cetera, are obligations of the state, and satisfaction of those obligations from funds other than the authority's funds, which means we're out of funds, obviously, is subject to appropriation, which obviously the only way the legislature or funds can be made available is through appropriations, but it just sounds like shall be made available by appropriation.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I think your understanding is basically correct that if there is a shortfall in revenue and we, Kabata, and in this case, Kabata is the state of Alaska, and this language is clarifying that, is responsible for making that annual payment. And so in these discussions we've been having in that example, that that is where Kabata and the state are one and the same in that obligation to make that payment. And this language is clarifying that.
I understand. And would that not then still be the same case if we got two-thirds of the way through the construction project and the bonding money was not enough to pay for the last third of the construction?
Senator Thomas, generally that is the responsibility of the private developer, not the state, and we don't have any intentions of securing debt ourselves. So that is the responsibility of the private developer, and normally there's a lot of provisions. These contracts are very large, but our first obligation to make an annual payment would be after the facility is available for the public's use, not before.
Sounds like a heck of a lawsuit. All right, thank you.
Could be.
Thank you. Do you have any more to present?
No, Mr.
If not, we'll excuse you and we'll go to a couple of the people we have online and in the room. Thank you. We're going to go to Jamie Kenworthy, and I understand you're online, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for inviting me to testify. Contrary to what you've heard, I do believe that SB 7980 will lead to a $750 million liability.
Excuse me. Hello? Could you get a little bit closer to the mic? We're having a little bit of trouble hearing you, and just for your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Jamie Kenworthy, I'm the former director of the Alaska Science and Tech Foundation, and I've read business plans for about 20 years. Contrary to what you just heard, I'm afraid that SB 79 and 80, and can you hear me now?
Not very well, but we can hear you a little bit better, yeah.
Will lead to a $750 million liability on the state's balance sheet. With interest, it easily be over $1 billion. SB 80 does not just transfer $150 million to cover Kabata's current estimate of the first 3 years of the bridge deficits. It also says that, contrary to Kabata's statute, that $600 million in Kabata can enter into partnerships that will now be obligations of the state, subject to annual appropriations. That's 19.75.111 that Senator Thomas referred to. The current statute allows Kabata to issue $500 million in bonds in its own name, but not the state's name. If you look at 19.75.221, Section G, the section that's got dealing with bonding, it says nothing in this section creates a debt or liability of the state. If the bonds that Kabata issues after the partnership agreement is made are obligations of the state is on the hook for them. I suggest that you ask directors of ADA and HFC if bonds that had moral obligation, and I own these bonds, if a moral obligation failed, would that affect the agency's credit rating? And I think the answer would be yes. And would it affect the state's credit rating? And I think the answer is yes there as well, because that's why the Kabata statute requires that any bonds they issue in their own name go through the state bond committee. The original definition of the public-private partnership was for a private sector firm to finance, build, and operate the Connect Bridge, to take the risk and receive the reward. The RFP was to be a market test. With these two bills, the state will now have the full downside of the project, and the private sector would only build and operate. They'd only take a construction risk. They wouldn't take a finance risk, and the state-guaranteed profit would go back to France or Australia, whichever bidding team won. If the legislature, instead of the private partner, is to sign that blank check, shouldn't that check be at least based on accurate revenue projections? Wilbur Smith is now redoing the traffic numbers, more based on a Matsu population forecast that UAA's ICER is using to analyze the highway-to-highway project, from 89,000 today to 169,000 in 2030. All the revenue projections that Kibata has given you are based on a 2030 Matsu population number nearly 50% higher, or 250,700. That projection was developed in 2007 by a Texas firm on contract to Kibata after the ICER population number was apparently too low to make the revenue numbers work. Last March, I gave Kibata, AMATS, and the Anchorage Assembly a simple spreadsheet showing the projected deficit for the first 10 years of the bridge averaged $25 million a year. That amount is what Matsu and Anchorage now each receive on average in total transportation funding the last decade, roads, public transit, and bikeways. Since March, three events have happened that make the project's finances much worse. First, we discovered the 50% population error that led revenue to be overestimated by 50%, and that's why Wilbur Smith is redoing the traffic number. Second, in November, Kibata was turned down for a federal TIFIA loan for one-third project costs, or $279 million. This was valuable low-cost money because bond payments did not start until 5 years after the bridge would open. Kibata, as you heard, is going to reapply this March 1st. But for reasons I can go into, my estimate of Kibata's chances for this year's application are, my estimate is between, their chances are between slim and none. Third, rates for long-term municipal revenue bonds, AA, AA, or investment grade, are now up to about 5%, even with the state's moral obligation. And make no mistake about it, without a state guarantee, the bonds will not receive an investment grade and will not find a market. That's why you have these bills in front of you. And, of course, attaching a guarantee to such iffy bonds would jeopardize the state's cherished new AAA credit rating for GO bonds. The payments on a $650 million bond at 5% interest amortized over 37.5 years is $38.3 million a year. You need 20,900 one-way trips a day at $5 a piece just to make the annual bond payments. The current traffic to and from the valley is 29,000 trips a day, and most of the valley will continue to have a trip taking less time on the Glen than the bridge, and that trip will be toll-free. Kibata's forecast for bridge trips in 2030 is about 40,000. We are having trouble getting DOTPF current traffic estimates for the bridge and Glen for the same year. My hunch is it's about half Kibata's estimate, and it would be helpful if that number would be made public. Trip forecasts should account for the fact that a toll reduces demand. On average, depending on income and travel distance, traffic modelers will tell you that a toll reduces traffic about 25%, and folks will drive an extra 8 miles to avoid paying one. So there will not be enough traffic to repay the bonds, even if the interest rate on the bonds is 0%. And you must add toll collection costs, sinking costs for O&M, and administration costs to annual bond repayment costs. So, aside from the 50% population error, how can Kibata project a huge positive return to the state over the next 60 years? As one bond geek warned me when I showed him the spreadsheets, if you allow me to project enough revenue and let me go out far enough to get that revenue, I can make any project look financially feasible. I'd recommend you let the private sector partners and the market, not the legislature, decide if this project is financially feasible. But based on my knowledge of the numbers, I'm afraid this request shows that the two potential private partners may already have said they are not interested in this project without a state guarantee. Maybe in 30 years there will be enough population the project pencils out. But unless you forego a lot of transportation projects for which there is existing need to finance a speculative project for which there is, at best, demand far in the future, I'd suggest these bills not move forward. If, as I expect, the private sector is not willing to take financial risk on the huge toll shortfall that cannot pay off the bonds, the CONIC project could be folded into DOTPF and compete for resources with other projects. If the RFP process goes forward, the legislature should repeat the conditions that the Anchorage Assembly and AMATS originally set to make sure this project does not crowd out other projects. One, no further state funds. Two, no state guarantee. And to do that, there would be no state obligation that's in the legislation before you. And three, a private sector willing to finance, build, and operate the project. Last year's March application for the federal TIFIA loan included a pledge that all toll shortfalls would be funded, quote, by annual appropriations of the state legislature to make the bond payments and cover operating funds. I got a copy of that application in July. It is your, after they told basically the Anchorage Assembly and community councils that don't believe Jamie's gloom and doom numbers, this basically is a, the private sector will take the risk. So it's your decision if Kubota's new March application makes the same pledge. Why would that pledge be made if basically, the private sector was going to take the risk? Thank you. Thanks for listening. I'll be glad to take any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Kennedy? Yes. Senator Thomas.
It's Mr.
Kenworthy.
Kenworthy. Thank you for your testimony. What interest rate are you considering when you come up with the $38 million debt service annually?
5%. That's I've been buying revenue bonds, but basically revenue bonds trade a little lower than GO bond issues. In others, they have a little higher risk, and so they get a little better interest rate. And right now, if you go out 20, 30 years, you can just check this on our website, AA municipals are paying 5%.
So, if I may, are you considering then that it's the conduit financing, I would assume, is not using the state's bonding authority. It is simply involving the state's bonding folks, potentially, that they have on retainer or whatever to structure the deal, not necessarily the state's bonding. Is that how you're figuring it, or are you looking at it differently, that it would be the state's bonding authority?
Well, when AIDA does conduit financing, they usually have the bank, AIDA takes the first risk, and the banks take the second risk. They give the credit to it. And so basically the businesses backed up by the banks are taking the risk. If AIDA does its own appropriation, as it did for some large projects that are well known, and there's no state, and they're not using a conduit as financing, then they're putting the bonds on the street using AIDA's application and bold print in the first place it says, this is not an obligation of the state of Alaska. However, everyone understands that it's a moral obligation, and that's why the interest rates on those bonds are higher than a state GO, but significantly lower than if just a private sector firm came to the marketplace. So AIDA cares about its credit rating, and the state of Alaska cares about AIDA's credit rating.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Kenworthy, for your testimony this afternoon. We'll go to Jeff Otteson from DOT. Nancy, could you open that door? It might be noisy, but it's really getting stuffy in here. Oh, this is fine, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Otteson. I'm the Director of Program Development for DOT, and I'm just here to offer a few more remarks and I think help provide some illumination of some of the issues. The TIFIA issue, this is the federal loan program that Kubota applied for. It's very much not dead. They are going to reapply. Just yesterday, President Obama announced a $450 million amount for TIFIA in the 2012 budget in the new transportation bill that he's proposing. He also announced in that same release yesterday a $5 billion per year infrastructure bank that would be $30 billion over 6 years of the bill, so $5 billion for 6 years. This would be a new opportunity for Kibata that they've not had a chance to even consider because it was announced just 24 hours ago. So there certainly are some opportunities there for low-interest financing that would be coming from the federal side. And I would just add that last summer, Secretary LaHood asked two of his senior FHWA officials to come out and visit the project site. They went across the Kinnick Arm by boat. They visited the staff there. These were very senior officials, the deputy administrator for FHWA and the person in charge of planning and environment for FHWA. So there clearly is an interest on the part of the federal agency toward this project. That I think is, it's important to know because they're watching this. They did approve the ROD, and that was a very big step for this project. We're hearing a lot here about risk, and I like to talk about, Alaska's a place where if you're going to live here, if you're going to do things, you have to take a little risk. Our state was built upon risk. We're always fighting the naysayers, and the people would have you do nothing. You can just take your example. We probably wouldn't be here if someone hadn't taken a few risks. There wouldn't be a North Slope. There wouldn't be a transportation system, et cetera. So I think as a state, if we're going to take a risk, who better to take a risk on than ourselves? This project is about the growth of Mat-Su and Anchorage, as well as the interior and the North Slope. That's where the traffic will come from that will pay for this bridge. And if you think that is a valid risk, that's where you put your money. That's kind of my simple way of looking at this. There's been a lot said about the population forecast in Mat-Su, but Mat-Su is not the only source of traffic on this bridge. It's not just a Mat-Su bridge. It's a bridge for Fairbanks. It's a bridge for your freight. It's a bridge for the North Slope and the freight that will go there and the future of the North Slope. It's a bridge for the tourism traffic that goes up to the National Park every year and to other points to the interior. So there's a lot of uses and a lot of activity on this bridge that have absolutely nothing to do with the growth of Mat-Su. And what growth does occur in Mat-Su, I think, will be swayed by this bridge. If this bridge is built, you will see growth occur toward the south end of Kinnick Goose Bay Road, and that will be the exact traffic that wants to use this bridge. If we don't build this bridge, the growth will probably continue to occur in places like Wasilla and Palmer, which would be more inclined to use the Glen Highway. In which case, we would be facing what? Widening the Glen Highway with not toll-supported revenue, but with state revenue, either from the federal program or the state program. So there's a trade-off here that's sort of implied, but not talked about an awful lot. We'll have to build capacity to the Mat-Su as it grows. Is it better to build that capacity with toll-supported projects or with non-toll-supported projects? Mike Foster noted that this project was accepted by the FHWA as part of the National Highway System. I would just confirm that. It was my office that made that application. We have been accepted provisionally, and all that means is we're on the list. The moment the project is real, it will be part of the National Highway System. That's an important point to make because as we go forward, this project doesn't compete for the kind of money that goes to AMATS. AMATS gets money for the non-NHS roads in Anchorage. Likewise, in Mat-Su, the communities that request money from us are requesting money that is not NHS in character. So this project is not competing with the same projects that are being discussed here. You've heard testimony that this is really competition for the same dollars that are going to those two localities. Finally, I would add, 3 P's are becoming a way of life in transportation. America is a little bit slow to the game, but they're happening more and more. If you look globally, there are just thousands of 3Ps, and they aren't just infrastructure. There's a lot of creativity in 3Ps. In Europe, you find 3Ps being used to develop vaccines, for example. Just as one example of risk-taking by the private sector for public good. Certainly in the United States, if you look at just to our south in Washington State, they're developing a toll-supported, it's not a 3P, but it's a toll-supported bridge to replace an existing bridge. And the history goes like this. This bridge was developed as a toll bridge in the 60s, developed. The bonds were paid off, and then the bridge is made a free bridge, no longer a toll-required bridge. Now that the bridge needs to be replaced, they're going to impose a toll before the new bridge is even built. They're going to start tolling prior to construction of the new bridge simply because they need this as a source of revenue to pay for the project. So a toll road in general, or something we probably need to think about as a state, it's certainly being used around the country now as a means to support projects. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas, Senator Menard, questions? Thank you very much. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you for the testimony. I just let you know I don't mind risk. I just like to know what the risk is and how much we're on the hook for potentially. So as long as somebody tells me what that is, and I'm still struggling with exactly what that amounts to, if it appears to be $150 million, that's one set of circumstances for risk. If it's $700 million, that's a whole different set of circumstances. And we deal with big projects here, so Sitna, Watana, or whatever, big projects, gas lines, a lot of money. So I think all that I'm looking for is to feel comfortable that I know what the risk is. So when somebody asks me, I can say, yep, it could be $500 million that the state's on the hook for. Not alluded to that it might be 150, yet the language in a bill, which is still is unclear to me, of how much potential, whatever potential there is, that we are liable for. That is my only concern. And I don't know that that's your purview, or if you have a thought on that or not from reading the bill, or if that's anything you care to even comment on. But my concern was obviously language was added for some reason, and it seemed to clarify it to me, but it seemed to clarify more risk and potential funding that could be required by the state, depending on what happens with the project.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I'm certainly not an expert on the legal language here, but my lay reading of it is this risk applies to the state's annual payment back to the 3P. We are obligated to pay that through Kibata based on the toll revenue. So they are obligated to make that annual payment. The question is, what supports that payment? Will there be enough traffic generating toll revenue that goes into Kibata's coffers to then make that annual payment? And that really boils down to traffic and the numbers of the traffic prediction. So what I would urge you to do is look at that next iteration of the traffic prediction by Wilbur Smith. They are credible. They are doing, as the Kibata testified, they are doing investment-grade traffic predictions to support these type of projects. And that's really, I think, the kind of numbers that should have the most meaning as you go forward.
They got a guarantee on their numbers?
Well, they don't have a guarantee, but what they have is a reputation that they work very hard to be credible and not to lose that credibility.
Certainly. I can understand that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Allison. I wonder if anybody from CLAW would like to come up to make some comments with regard to the Kenworthy testimony. Or do you feel okay? As he made some statements that really seemed to make a lot of sense to me, but I want to make sure that you have the opportunity to say something as it relates to his statements.
Yes. Again, Mike Foster with Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, and thank you for the return invite to come forward. Mr. Kenworthy has made a lot of statements, and he has a lot of information. We've seen a lot of the information that has gone through that. There's a couple of things I would like to add on to is, and I think this also addresses some of Senator Thomas's concern, is to us, this reserve fund that we're asking to be appropriated, it allows us to go to market, allows us to go out and test the private sector and the interests of this project, what their interest is in this project. It allows us to obtain for the state of Alaska the best available annual payment that they require in order to lay out the capital to design, build, and operate this facility, to take the initial risks. Our risks are more of the long-term risks. Our risk, the state of Alaska's risk, is the annual payment of this. A lot of this boils down to the traffic model, and there's a lot of discussions over you know, the traffic counts, the traffic models, I think they vary 25% back and forth. There are some new ICER numbers. There are some new census numbers. Our consultant, Wilbur Smith, is going through some of these numbers to, as Mr. Hemingway said, to do another evaluation for an investment grade traffic analysis. We don't believe it is going to differ much from where we're at. However, the real test of this, the real test is even this reserve fund that is established and appropriated isn't going to be used unless a private partner, unless an agreement or contract is entered into with a private partner. The state of Alaska, in approving or passing Senate Bill 79 and Senate Bill 80, all that does is allow us to create and fund this reserve fund. It allows us to go to market. It allows us to attract proposals. However, at the end of the day, if there is not a good proposal in the best interest of the state of Alaska, we certainly aren't going to enter into an agreement where the risks are unproportional or disproportional. And it allows us to go out and test the waters. It allows us to hopefully, we believe, that we will get attractive proposals. We believe we will get proposals that we will entertain and move forward with one of the private partners. The whole idea of a public-private partnership is the word partnership. It's a public, which is state of Alaska, private, which is a private entity. We each share in the risk and we each share in the reward. The risk that the private developer shares is the risk to build it. You know, there's been discussion about what if it goes over budget, what happens here, what happens there, the what if scenario. Well, that's his risk. His risk is to design, build, and operate it. Okay, if he does it successfully and he has a return on his investment, well, that's the American way. Our risk as a state is that our traffic model is accurate, or our traffic model produces the revenue that we need to in order to make those annual payments. And so to address some of Jamie's concerns and stuff, is I understand his concerns. I understand a lot of it has to do around the traffic modeling, the financing of money, the risk the state has. And being an Alaska resident, I am concerned about the same risks. I'm concerned about the growth. I grew up in Alaska. I've seen Anchorage grow from hardly anything. I grew up in Glen Allen. I remember when there wasn't a parked highway. You know, the state has taken a lot of risks over time because we are growing, and we will continue to grow. We have a correction facility that we're building right across the inlet. The correction facility is 70-some miles from Anchorage, 12 miles the other way. I know I got a little past that. But to answer Jamie's questions, I understand his risks. You know, I think that we have mitigated those risks through these bills and through our process.
He made a statement about a TIFIA application that wasn't funded.
The TIFIA applications that we have submitted is kind of a placeholder. We did not have a record of decision in place. So by us submitting TIFIA, we were encouraged by Federal Highways to submit these applications. It allows them, one, be familiar with the project. I mean, after all, this is a Department of Transportation project. We did not expect to have those approved because we did not have a record of decision. Now that we have a record of decision, now when we submit this TIFIA, and I also pointed out, as Mr. Austin said, it's $450 billion that's being there. $450 million, I forgot. $450 billion, I got my zeros off. Don't hold that against me. But $450 billion, that's about threefold what the previous TIFIA was. So the current administration is rolling more money into transportation. We feel pretty confident that we will get that TIFIA ability for our private sector to go out and use that loan. We, the state of Alaska, does not back that loan. I mean, we are not on the hook for that loan when they use it. All we do is we apply for it, and then when it's there, they can go and access, and they hopefully will get that better interest that they can use for market.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? No, thank you very much for coming back up to the table.
Thank you.
I don't have anybody else online, do we? No? Okay. Do we want to call You want Dennis Egan to come back up? I could ask him to come back up.
Yeah. Could we have an at ease, please?
Yeah. Let's have an at ease. Could we have Dennis Egan? Into session, and I'd like to, before we go into the next phase, I'd like to have Senator Menard introduce a member of the Kubota Board that's here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Allow me to introduce one of our board members on the Kubota. She hails from Palmer, Janet Kincaid, so I just want to give her the recognition that she deserves. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here with us today. I appreciate that. And I want to welcome Senator Egan back into the committee met structure today. As chairman of the Transportation Committee, it's my intention to move these two bills today. There are some questions of finance that are really appropriate to the next committee referral, which is the Finance Committee. And if we have two members of the Finance Committee here, they're going to have further opportunity to discuss this bill in finance on other questions they may have. So I'm going to close public testimony and ask for what is the wish of the committee.
I'd like to move, make a motion to move Senate Bill 79 and 80 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, and those bills are moved, and we're adjourned. Thank you very much.